वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 30 द एक्टिविटीज ऑफ द पचेतास टेक्स्ट 42 ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पोर्ट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी प्रभुपाद
Nama
Samaya
Samaya
Shuddhaya
Shuddhaya
Purushaya
Purushaya
Paraya
Paraya
Cha Vasudevaya
Vasudevaya
Satvaya
Satvaya
Tubhyam
Tubhyam
Bhagavate
Bhagavate
Nama
Nama
Namak samaya shuddhaya
Namak samaya shuddhaya
Purushaya paraya cha
Purushaya paraya cha
Vasudevaya satvaya
Vasudevaya satvaya
Tubhyam bhagavate nama
Tubhyam bhagavate nama
Nama We offer our respectful obeisances.
We offer our respectful obeisances.
Samaya.
Samaya.
Who is equal to everyone.
Who is equal to everyone.
Shuddhaya.
Shuddhaya.
Who is never contaminated by sinful activities.
Who is never contaminated by sinful activities.
Purushaya.
Purushaya.
Unto the Supreme Person.
Unto the Supreme Person.
Paraya.
Paraya.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
Cha.
Cha.
Also.
Also.
Vasudevaya.
Vasudevaya.
Living everywhere.
Living everywhere.
Satvaya.
Satvaya.
Who is in the transcendental position.
Who is in the transcendental position.
Tubhyam.
Tubhyam.
Unto you.
Unto you.
Bhagavate,
Bhagavate,
the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Nama.
Nama.
Obeisances.
Obeisances.
Translation. Dear Lord, you have no enemies or friends. Therefore, you are equal to everyone. You cannot be contaminated by sinful activities. And your transcendental form is always beyond the material creation. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead because you remain everywhere within all existence. You are consequently known as Vasudeva. We offer you our respectful obeisances. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as He also enters into each and every heart in all living entities and into each and every atom also. Paramanu Chayantarastam. Because the Supreme Lord lives everywhere, he is known as Vasudeva. Although he lives everywhere within the material world, he is not contaminated by the modes of nature. The Lord is therefore described in Isopanishad as Apapavidham. He is never contaminated by the modes of material nature. When the Lord descends on this planet, he acts in many ways. He kills demons and performs acts not sanctioned by the Vedic principles, that is, acts considered sinful. Even though he acts in such a way, he is never contaminated by his action. He is therefore described herein as Shuddha, meaning always free from contamination. The Lord is also Sama, equal to everyone. In this regard, he states in Bhagavad Gita, Samoham Sarvabhuteshu Nami Dvesho Stina Priya. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all. But whoever renders service unto me in devotion is a friend, is in me, and I am also a friend to him. Bhagavad Gita 9:29. The Lord has no one as his friend or enemy, and he is equal to everyone. The word sattvaya indicates that the Lord indicates that the form of the Lord is not material. It is Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchit Ananda Vigraha. His body is different from our material bodies. One should not think that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has a material body like ours. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sanyavani Pastatani Satani. In the previous verse, the Prajaitas said that even great persons like Manu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva cannot fully understand the glories of the Supreme Lord and His potencies. But they have offered their prayers according to their capacities. And so the Prajaitas say that, be encouraged, they will also offer their prayers. So now, in this verse, we have some beginning description of some of the qualities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who can never be completely described. But although that we're often informed of that, that he's inconceivable and therefore cannot be completely described beyond our imagination to understand the limit, but that doesn't mean that we don't know anything about him. Rather, in Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a great deal of information. But the idea is that whatever has been told, that's just a tiny indication. There's much, much more. But Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures give, comparatively speaking with any other information from any other religious scripture, enormous amount of detailed, wonderful information about the nature of God. In fact, sometimes it is said by theologians or devotees that the main feature of God that we can know is that He can't be known. That's very important to understand in order to believe in His existence and catch a glimpse of the first important quality, that He can't be known. We know this in the Vedic process when they examine different things or within the universe, which are material, and say, and that is not God, and that is not God, He's not there, He's not there. Nyeti, nyeti. Not, He's not that, He's not that. But in the Upanishads, this is also a method of the teaching that eliminating from consideration of different material qualities, that this is the Brahman, but the Brahman is different than this. All these things are perishable, and He is eternal. And in Western mysticism also, they have what is called the via negativa, the negative way of describing God, and that's the main. The main thing you can say about Him is that He can't be known. Well, this is not the main thing that we say in Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna, that He can't be known. That we say very clearly, that He cannot be known fully. But by His grace, by His desire, Lord Krishna, through the Vedic literatures and through the process of bhakti yoga, gives us many opportunities for very direct contact with His name and form and activities. Prabhupada used to say that we can tell you God's name and His place of residence, His address, phone number, everything. Not everything, but many, many things. So people, even who are religious minded, are astonished, and not only astonished, sometimes they become disturbed, and they say, no, no, we cannot accept so much information about God. He's supposed to be unknown. How can you speak so much about him? But the Bhagavatam replies, but aside from the atheist, if you understand that there is a person, intelligence behind the universe, and who is the goal of all of human life, activities and worship, that he is a person, and that he has an abode, a kingdom of God, then why stop there? We naturally want to know what's going on in the kingdom, and what is God like as a person. And sometimes when we get just aside from negative, we just get a teeny, teeny hints, they're not so appealing. That, well, the kingdom of God, it's like light. Or, as a person, he's a judge. He judges you. And sometimes people become frightened away. Then I don't find this very attractive. At least here, in this material world, I know what an abode is. There's a house, and there are rooms, and there are people there. And you can call them demons, but at least I know them, and I have loving relationships with them. And I can see their faces, and I can talk with them. But light, judgment, I'll become a non-devotee. And then sometimes, because this hankering cannot be really satisfied by just saying, oh, there's no God, then the impersonal philosophies, which are mostly led by Shankaracharya, whose knowledge has been distributed in different ways all over the world, they say, we have a more intelligent understanding than this simple idea that God is a father, but you don't know anything about him. And that is that all these descriptions of God as a person, they're certainly helpful. They were created by different sages to give us an idea of the spiritual life, kind of symbols to fix our mind on. But they're all temporary things, creations of this material world, part of the Maya, or ignorance. And the absolute truth is beyond that. And he has no form and no senses. But and there is such all-pervading spirit. So some people think that's a more intelligent philosophical approach. But Srimad Bhagavatam goes beyond a primitive concept of God, which sometimes is justifiably accused as being anthropomorphic, or a God who seems to be just made up of human qualities and descriptions made by humans. Goes beyond that, and also goes beyond the absolute as only impersonal. But we understand Vedanti tat tat vidas tat pram yajjanam advayam brahmeti bhagavaniti brahmeti paramatmeti bhagavaniti shabdite. The absolute truth has a certainly impersonal feature of all-pervading spirit, and he also has a feature of in the heart of every person who can be contacted by yoga. And he has also a personal form, Bhagavan. And to attract us back to Godhead, he comes in his Bhagavan form. Many Bhagavan forms are incarnations, and teaches in different ways about the spiritual world, where there's Bhagavat Dharma, the abode of the Lord and all the Lord's devotees. So the problem for the ordinary mind, however, is that even this merciful act that Krishna does of telling us about his nature becomes problematic, because he does appear as human-like. says in the Bible, God is made, man is made in the image of God. Everything is made in the image of God. Everything comes from Him. Janmadya Sataha. But this human-like form, this human form is very special because the original form of the Absolute Truth is human-like. That is, we see in forms of Krishna or Vishnu, as Bhagavan. He also has many other forms that appear in different species, even animal forms, in which he is transcendental. And he has impersonal forms. And as you are inclined to approach him, he will reciprocate with you. But the human-like form is the form that he comes in as Lord Krishna, Lord Vishnu, Lord Rama, and many other forms. And so this point is, in this verse, is this should not be taken, this form, as a material form. Therefore, we have to hear from the Bhagavatam and hear from the pure devotees, and only then can we understand. But it's not really difficult. If you are submissive and you hear this presentation, it is consistent, and it is, by spiritual understanding, it is certainly reasonable that God is a person like us and has all desires and qualities, but He's infinite, and we are tiny. He's not to be denied the spiritual forms and activities, but none of them are material. This much we certainly do know about Krishna. Now, another way that Krishna is just very, very kind to fallen souls in the material world is that he comes in the deity form also. And this is also a great stumbling block for the non-devotee, because the form is quite apparently a material form, brass or wood, and has been made in that way. And in some religions, just in their, again, in their striving to separate the divine from the material, and thinking that he must be unknown and not something like all the ordinary things we know, extraordinary, unknown, they say, don't make any statues of God. So, and sometimes they even say, don't say the name of God, it's too holy. In the Jewish religion, supposedly only once a year, a special priest says the name of God. One time when Prabhupada heard that, he appreciated the one aspect of it, the gravity and the holiness, which is the name of God, and is taken so seriously. However, when the Lord Himself tells us to always chant His name, then who's going to be so serious or religious to say, no, no, I won't do it? That point was made by Balabhacharya to Lord Chaitanya. You, Lord Chaitanya and your associates, you're always chanting the Lord's name, but the chaste wife doesn't say the name of her husband. And the Lord Chaitanya said, but the main thing the chaste wife does, that may be something she does according to the convention, but the main thing, her main spirit is to do whatever the husband says. And this husband, Krishna, says, always chant. So how can we not say his name? So, but the deity worship, that's also, if you think of it speculatively, you won't get anywhere. But when you hear Krishna's motivation, and when you understand Krishna's position, it's not at all a problem, at least theoretically, to understand that the deity form is not material and is actually the Supreme Lord. Because he has a form which we cannot see until we become completely pure and liberated, that's a fact. We all agree, all the theists. You can't see God until you become pure. But God is so kind that until that time, he doesn't want us to become Mayavadis, to think, or atheists. Well, I can't see God, I become very disappointed. Why not? It's not reasonable of us to demand, but still, Krishna says, give them a chance. They're not ready. They can't see me. All they can see is matter. I'll come in matter then. And when they're purified, they can see my Satchitananda form and come to my spiritual abode. But I can't bear to have them rot in the material world and be attracted to material activities and forms. I'll come in the matter. But when I come into the matter, it won't be matter. So in the Shastra, it gives directions that his form is like this, and you please make a form out of earth or any of these elements, even the element of mind, and not some concocted form. This is our understanding of the biblical injunctions against graven images, that at that time, as there was one specific instance where Moses, he went away from his people, and then he came back, and they were all into some nonsense. They concocted a statue of a calf, and they were worshipping it. He said, what is this? Don't worship these idols, just worship God. So we don't worship idols. We don't make concocted forms or think this is God or that's God. But God has a form, and so his form can be made into a statue, and he can be worshipped. So that has to be done with great awe and reverence, even in the practicing stage, not taken as an ordinary thing. Even we in the Krishna conscious movement, although we worship God and God's consort, Radha Krishna, who actually they should be worshipped in a very... they are worshipped in a very intimate, spontaneous way that goes beyond awe and reverence. But we worship Radha and Krishna with awe and reverence. The deity form is Krishna himself, and to explain it technically, since Krishna is everything and all energy is his, so he can convert the material energy into the spiritual energy. He can do it. And in the case of the deity, he does. If you invite the deity and worship the deity properly. This is a great boon, a great advantage for us that we can see the deity form and in a simple, faithful way approach Krishna and have our eyes satisfied and our minds satisfied that God is a person, he's not far, far away only, and no trace of him in any way. He will come right into your home and accept offerings of food and all tender, respectful care that you can give him. Very great boon for the aspiring transcendentalists, and is a great misfortune that people reject it, thinking it's idol or anything like that. So then, as in this prayer, there are many, many prayers or verses that describe some of the qualities of Krishna, and they're very philosophical. You have to really be receptive and clear-minded to hear them. It's not so easy sometimes. But if you study Srimad Bhagavatam, you get a real comprehensive understanding how God is, Vasudeva is everywhere. He's in the deity, that's a great relief that he can come. But not only that, even when you're not in the temple, which for many people is most of the time, Krishna he's everywhere. So the Krishna conscious philosophy doesn't lack the all-pervading teaching which the Mayavadi gives, which gives a kind of intellectual comfort to those who accept that philosophy, to know that God is not just some person way in the sky or heaven, but he's everywhere, and you are actually part of that. Tatvamarsi, aham brahmasmi. You are the spirit, which is God. And everything is the spirit that is God. The tree, the sky, all the matter. So this is very appealing. Yes, if there's God, why shouldn't he be everywhere? Then we don't reject this kind of God consciousness, that God is everywhere, and that God is a person. So the Vaishnava philosophy is not outdone anywhere for enabling us to get ourselves completely involved, intellectually and satisfied, intellectually, emotionally, physically, and certainly religiously, with the devotional service to Krishna. Yeah. And always the emphasis is that he's a person. Like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, remember me, and then he says, I can be remembered in this way, that I am the oldest person, the greatest person, and always a person, it's described. And he's always a person. Therefore, as a person, we also are encouraged to develop a personal relationship with him. And we associate with his persons, the Vishnu Jana, the people of Vishnu, the devotees. That's very much advantageous to our Krishna consciousness. So the qualities here, there are just two or three mentioned out of innumerable, inconceivable qualities, that he's equal to everyone, that he's not contaminated by any sin, although he does come into this sinful world, and that he's everywhere, and therefore he's called Vasudeva. And therefore, we offer you our respectful obeisances. That's always the conclusion of any discussion or thought about God. You don't think about him and then sum it up and say, well, he's a nice fellow, or I'm better than him, something like that. But, or you don't sum it up and say, well, that's it. That completes that work. We can now go on to another subject besides God. We've just completed the full study. But rather you say, at the end of any discussion, no matter how long or short, that, let's offer our obeisances to him. He is so great, and we are so much in need of his protection. It stimulates awe, it stimulates love, and worship. So one does this naturally. If he actually hears about Krishna, he wants to offer obeisances to him. There's no other proper response. So, are there any questions or discussion? Mathura?
Now you say Krishna's unlimited, and yet we can't worship him in anything that's man-made. Yet if he's unlimited, he can be in anything. So why is that?
I'm not sure that I got that. I say that Krishna is...
And I can be anywhere at any time. So even if something's man-made or something, why can't he still be in that?
In anything?
In anything, then. Why can't we worship a blackboard?
Right. Well, he's in the blackboard. The blackboard is nothing but Krishna's energy, material energy. But the blackboard is different than the Archivigraha, because the Archivigraha is in the form of Krishna. Therefore, it becomes Krishna, and worshipable as spiritual. In a higher sense of understanding, the blackboard is also spiritual, but it's not the worshipable form of God. So it's much. It's much more productive to worship Krishna in his form and meditate on his lotus feet as described in the scripture, and then address his form and feed his form. which is the form of Krishna in the spiritual world, than thinking, well, the blackboard is actually completely spiritual because it's from Krishna. But it's not authorized kind of worship. You can worship a blackboard saying like that. Well, I'm going to worship the blackboard because actually I want to show that everything is spiritual. And so this is also an outstarted cult of blackboard worship. But it's just your concoction. You have nothing to stand on that's how people should worship God. Although your argument is feasible that it is spiritual. But who'll do it? Because that's not what Krishna doesn't want to be worshipped as the blackboard as Archivigraha. Or he would have given that. There are certain stones you can worship as Vishnu. He appears in some Shilas. But that's also what Krishna says. Here, take these stones and you can worship me. But you can't concoct a religion. Dharman tu sakshat Bhagavat pranita. It's tradition. It's by sampradaya. Similarly, you could say any name. I am the sound and ether, Krishna says. So all sound is Krishna. So why not just chant rose, rose, rose? But that's a concocted, although we appreciate your point that the rose is also God, because it's God's energy. But that will not do. Krishna is, as Lord Chaitanya says, you have fully invested your energy in your holy names. They're not ordinary sounds. Golokera Premadana. Krishna Nam Sankirtan. The holy name comes from the spiritual world. So these are upstart plans to worship God in a different way when such a perfectly good way is given. So we don't worship these things, but we do regard them with care as objects that are, everything is Krishna, so nothing should be unnecessarily destroyed or mistreated like a blackboard. Ah, here's a blackboard filled with Srimad Bhagavatam verse. Actually, it is worshipful. So Prabhupada once said that don't think that the deity in Krishna Balaram Mandir is worshipable and spiritual, but the temple floor is not. So that if your job is to wipe the floor, that's ordinary, but the pujari is doing some very exalted spiritual activity. No, he said it's all spiritual. Matter should be used carefully, although it cannot be worshipped exactly like Krishna. But then all the different things, the cartels and the tape recorders and everything that's used by the devotees should be treated with care, which at least somewhat fulfills the spirit that you're expressing. Well, why just the deity? Why can't everything be spiritual? You say, yes, everything is, and so it should be. You should be spiritual, you are spiritual, and so you should handle everything in the world, deal with everything. And an understanding that it's all Krishna's energy. But then this Arya Samaj group, they say, yes, everything is spiritual, and therefore we don't worship the deity. That's the one thing in the world that's not spiritual. And Prabhupada chides them for their nonsense. That God is everywhere, but he's in this one place, he's not the temple. He's there, certainly. Not only he's also there, but he's especially there. Main thing is scripture and guru and sadhu. And they say, these are the forms, these are the ways to take a special, if you want a relationship with the Supreme Lord, his form is like this, worship him in the deity, chant these particular names, and then we should just follow what they say.
I can't be ignorant asking this question because you've already answered it to me before, you know, but say for instance the deity and you've got two deities of the same, then if God can't, God's in the deity, then why can't It'd be too, why can't you worship like Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda? So the two deities are Lord Nityananda. Can you worship one as Lord Chaitanya and the other as Lord Nityananda? If your God can be in the deity, you know, if he can be in anything. If it's worship like that, then wouldn't you?
Well, what if I said, what if we said, made it more obvious that you had two deities of Radharani and you wanted to worship Radha Krishna? You say, well, I'll make this one we'll call Krishna. You just couldn't do that because it's Radharani. So, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya, you can hardly tell them apart. But as far as I know, when the sculptor makes them, one is supposed to be, because of the way his hand is raised, Lord Chaitanya, and one is supposed to be Lord Nityananda. So they're so similar that you might be able to worship it and no one would even notice. But then someone would notice. So if that's what they're supposed to be, that one is, if one is supposed to actually be Lord Chaitanya, and if you look at it in a certain way you can tell, and the other is only supposed to be Lord Nityananda, then why not just do it right? If somebody were somewhere in the world where he couldn't get any other deities and he got two of the same, all right, I'm sure Krishna would accept it. You please be Lord Chaitanya and you be Lord Nityananda. But if it's no big thing to get the right deities, then why not do it?
So, verse is quoted in the purple Salabhan Sala, big Buddha, Krishna is a friend of everyone.
Oh, yeah.
And there's the like a relationship with Krishna, a friendship, Sakyaras. But then further in the purport, he states that no one can be Krishna's friend. Could you maybe elaborate on that?
The Lord has no one as his friend or enemy. He's equal to all. It's used in a certain way there, as I understand it, that it's used in a dualistically with enemy. He doesn't have friends and enemies, which means the kind of friends that we make who we're partial to, they're our friends, means that these people are not our friends. When I say I have friends, I mean there's certain people I like, and it automatically means and other people I don't like. But Krishna, there's not a certain group that are his friends. Now I read a purport Prabhupada was saying, he put it in Krishna's words, that Krishna doesn't think, these are my intimate companions, meaning like liberated souls, and these others I don't care for, they're distant from me. Although we line up like that, some of us are devotees and some of us are non-devotees, but from Krishna's point of view, we're all equally dear to him. So those who come to Krishna, that's for their advantage, but he's equally well-disposed towards the others, even though they don't want him. In that sense, he doesn't have any friends, meaning a clique, who are the only ones that he loves. He loves everyone. And then somebody becomes his enemy, Krishna still is that person's friend and wants to do good for the friend, or for that person who says he's Krishna's enemy. That's what it means. He's not partial the way we are.
How would that relate in the, like there's a different relationship with Krishna?
Well, in the sense that he's the well-wisher, he's the best friend. So that you could say that sense of Sakya is there in all the rasas. Radharani certainly considers Krishna her best friend, and in addition to being her best lover, he's a wonderful companion and friend. We sometimes say that the spiritual master is my best friend, or Krishna is my friend. In Sanskrit also there's like five different words for friend. There's all kinds of meanings to the word friend. And even among the Sakyas, some of the Sakyas are servant-like friends who do always like menial services for Krishna, but they're his pals. And other friends are just like completely equal, and some friends are a little bit superior to Krishna. And some friends are in Vrindavan, some friends are in Dwarka. There are friends like Uddhava, and there are friends like Arjuna, and there are friends like Subala. They're all quite different. So, Boktaram Jagatapasam, Sarvaloka Maheswaram, Suradam. Krishna is the friend, Suradam Sarvabhutanam. Krishna is the friend of everyone. Whether you're in the Sakya Rasa or whatever Rasya, he's the well-wisher. He's certainly the well-wisher of all the conditioned souls who don't even know their Rasa. And that sense, he's the well-wisher, the best friend we have. And then when we realize our rasa, it may be something that's not the Sakya rasa, which emphasizes informality and intimacy and equality.
You were saying about how the deity form is the stumbling block of non-devotees.
Yeah.
And then we hear that devotion or our attitude, how we see the deity is the most important thing. So I was wondering, how do you know then, you know, the difference between sentimentality and, you know, genuine realization that the deity is God. So, you know, what are the symptoms of it?
In other words, somebody, he might have an apparent attraction to the deity and criteria and things, so it looks like he's attracted. He's got full realization. But you're asking, well, how to know? Is that symptomatic attraction itself? Is that the proof? Or could it be that there's something false in that attraction? So that's possible. Anything that's, if it's not genuine, if it's sentimental, then some of the symptoms are that, for example, the person, he goes through some motions of affection or worship, but he really doesn't, he's not sincere about it, and so in different obvious ways, he won't come through. Like in the deity worship that Prabhupada has asked us to do, it's very extensive and responsible and, in a sense, burdensome, although the devotees want to do it. So that in itself makes it non-sentimental. If you worship a deity 24 hours a day, you have to think about and consider and protect and offer the deity. In many Hindu places, they bring the deity out and do some ritual and then don't do it. So it seems like, you know, when they're going before the deity and considering him God, and then after that ceremony, they treat it like an idol. They have a lot of Hindu temples in the Trinidad and Guyana. In some of the temples, they keep the deity wrapped up in a bag. He's on the altar, but then, because they don't have anything to do with him, except like once a week, and so that he doesn't get dusty or anything, and they just wrap him up. So then that worship has got some sentimentality to it. If he's really God, then there should be all kinds of considerations. Therefore, in the beginning, in sadhana bhakti, there's so many rules and regulations. Don't enter the room unless you ring the bell. Don't, in front of the deity, don't get angry, don't pass air, don't do this or that. So, we should follow those things leading up to spontaneous attraction for Krishna, at which stage maybe, even if you transgress some of those things, it's not so important. That would be one way to show non-sentimental attraction. So if a devotee is following rules and regulations of sadhana and the rules and regulations of deity worship, and in that mood of life starts to feel attraction for the deity, then that should certainly be encouraged. Don't say, oh no, that's sentimental. Sometimes devotees would write to Prabhupada and say, Sometimes I see the deity and I cry or I feel very happy. I think the deity is happy with me. What do you think? And Prabhupada would say, that's very nice. I'm very glad to hear you having these symptoms of attraction for the deity. Because he knew it was being done within a setting of rules and regulations. So that would be one way to reply to that. Not that we're on guard for any kind of emotional symptom, and as soon as it comes, we stamp it out. But we don't want concocted forms of worship or imagination in relationship with the deity also. There was one one devotee, he was a very prominent pujari in ISKCON, and Prabhupada saw him one day and asked him, how is... And he named the names of those deities, Rukmini Dwarkadish. How is Rukmini Dwarkadish? I think Prabhupada said, are they happy or something like that? Are they satisfied? But then the devotee laughed embarrassedly and said, I don't know. Meaning, I don't know how they are. And Prabhupada said, oh, you should. So, if you actually are working so nicely with the deity and doing everything to care for them, then it would seem that in different ways you're going to feel and think, this is not a stone, this is not brass. If it is, why am I doing all this? Am I such a fool? So you start to understand that it's not an idol. It's not just that we recite theoretically from the books to those who say, oh, that's how idol worship. That we have to do. And we have to be convinced of the Siddhanta. But we also feel it. I remember another nice example, a devotee. He was a temple president, and he was very much involved in the worship of the temple deities of Gornitai in his temple. He was telling me that how he was out in the city somewhere, and he had an encounter in which it was like a temptation by lust, and it could have led to a downfall. Just like Maya gives us so many invitations, and when he was feeling a little shaky, then in his mind, spontaneously, he thought of the deities that he was worshipping all the time. And he just felt, oh, I can't do this sinful activity. What about my worship of Gaurini Thai? So, you can describe like that, things that don't only happen to Mahabhagwats, also happen to ordinary devotees, when they still, according to rules and regulations, and very faithfully worship the deity. He protects them.
What's the difference between the deities in the temple that are installed by a ceremony, and we may have our own deities and we're offering food, but there hasn't been a ceremony of installation?
I would think that yayatamam pajante tams tavibhijamyaham, that if you are approaching a deity, if all you lack, in other words, is a ceremony, then one answer would be, well, why lack it? Why not do it? Why not have an installation ceremony? And the installation ceremony is sort of like the initiation ceremony. Somebody could accept a spiritual master unofficially in his heart, follow all the rules and regulations, then he's practically as good as initiated. Why not get initiated? So that would be one answer. You can keep a simple form of worship. Of course, the other difference is that the household deity worship is very simple, and not six offerings a day with all kinds of sweets and everything at the same time. But it's a simple worship, but it should be regulated. So if you have a regulated worship, even if it's only tulsi and water, but it's done with devotion, then then Krishna will respond and come as you worship the deity. Even a temple has to depend on devotion. The temple can't say, this temple, the deity here, it was officially installed, so this is the bhakti performed here, and the prasadam here and everything, this is the most Krishna you can possibly get. That would be true as so long as it's being, the worship is actually being done properly, not if there's all kinds of offenses, terrible worship. Krishna's not chained up in the temple that he can't leave. So it would, the important thing would be the devotion. If you have devotion in your home, and how do you show devotion? That we already mentioned. With different kinds of practices, steady worship practices, and thinking about the deity and caring for the deity in a non-concocted way. So although it may be different or simpler in the home, if there's devotion there, and there's devotion in the temple, then Krishna is present. And then you have the murti in the murti waller's shop. They're all lined up. He's not being worshipped yet. So it starts when there's actually worship. Of course, as ISKCON becomes more institutionalized and more learned in terms of the scriptures, and things like installation became more according to rules and regulations and more technical with priestly function. But even up to Prabhupada's disappearance, it wasn't that complicated an affair. It was such at least that he thought his own Western-born devotees could do it. Not that they even had to go and live and get trained up by an Indian Brahmin. I know when we installed Radhakrishna deities in Boston, I asked Prabhupada how to do it, and he wrote me a letter and said, it was very, very simple. And he just said, make it as opulent as possible according to your means. Chant some Brahma Samhita verses. Chant Hare Krishna a lot. Have kirtan, prasadam. And bathe the deity. But now it may be more technical, but some installation, and then once the installation, it's like a marriage. Now this deity is being worshipped. And so then from then on, the puja goes on. And that Prabhupada wasn't casual about. He said, this is my greatest fear, that after I leave, the deity worship I've established, you will change it, start doing different things. Or neglect, stop. So if you get, you can become like that with your household deity.
Manually, but then I was just reading the Srimad Bhagavatam. We know if we practice Krishna consciousness, or we try to practice Krishna consciousness, our activities they kind of run parallel, they're not sinful. As well as reading the Bhagavatam, that Prabhupada was talking about the society girls in Krishna's time, they were prostitutes, but they were always meditating on Krishna, and he was talking about how the material circumstance can impede devotional service. I was just wondering how a person could be thinking of Krishna and be in that position.
Well, that's a general statement. Then in the Bhagavatam, there's a few close-up portraits of prostitutes who either were devotees or became devotees, like that Pingala. And And they weren't thinking that this is a good occupation to serve Krishna, but they were very sorry. Pingala, she, one night she was doing her business and standing outside waiting for a customer, and nobody came, and she waited and waited. And then she got so disappointed that she decided that she's just like changed her mentality. What an abominable occupation I have. I want to surrender to Krishna. And she said, I've engaged in so much sinful activity. And then you had the prostitute who tried to lure Haridas Thakur. And she also thought, oh, what a sinful occupation I have. I've committed so many sinful activities. So they felt very bad about that. And at least in these cases, they gave it up. But it's a little puzzling to understand, you know, the picture of Dwarka or Hastinapur, and you have prostitutes who are said to be devotees. Api chet sudaracharo bhajate man namyak. Even if someone has a sinful activity, if he worships Krishna, he'll soon become purified. The conclusion of the realization would be to give up the sinful activity. Partly what's puzzling is that we sometimes hear a social description that the prostitutes have some function in society. Otherwise, why wouldn't Krishna just stop all that activity when he was there? But, to try to understand that now is a little difficult. But there were some occupations which were looked down upon, just like there are people who are looked down upon, dog eaters and different kinds of untouchable people. But if somehow they develop attraction for Krishna, then they start being recognized as devotees of Krishna, and at some point they would stop those abominable activities. The prostitute thought that I have to do something, and so somehow by karma this is my occupation. But then when she really got enlightened by Haridas Thakur, she didn't have any occupation, just became a complete mendicant and just depended on alms. But that stage, at some point, they can't realize, but still they're devotees. I'm a devotee, but I have to do this. Just like to some degree you could say, well, anybody who works for some boss, he's a prostitute, and he thinks like that. Well, I have to prostitute myself in this job, and that every occupation has some fault. So anyway, I have to do this lousy work. I can't get any better work, but I'm a devotee. I don't know, something like that. That's one of those things that always puzzle devotees in me. Hear about the prostitutes in Dwarka. That's the best I can try to understand it. All right, stop here. All glories to Prabhupada.
Good night.